The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, so welcome back to The Back Page, your weekly helping of all the best sport and a few extra bets just to wash it down. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have Paul O'Hare from the Irish Mirror. How are you doing, Paul?
Good, Shane, thanks.
Shane Mahan is back with us from Ladbrokes.
How are you, Shane?
Not too bad, not too bad. And dialing in from themirror.co.uk is Aaron Flanagan. How are you, Aaron?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good stuff, good stuff. First of all, Shane, I had to drag it out of you, but you had a winner last week.
Yeah, at long last, ending a barren spell for myself personally anyway. But thankfully, Apple's Jade and Dead Duty did the business last Sunday at Fairy House. And I think we were just touched off as well in the Ladbrokes Trophy with them. I think Whisper was put up by one of us as well in the big race on the Saturday. Just beaten by Willie Mullins' Total Recall in the end by about a neck. But yeah, winning start for myself in the show last weekend, glad to say.
Good stuff, good stuff. Hopefully you'll help us take a bit more money out of Ladbrokes' pocket
let's hope.
There. But
let's hope.
On the show today, busy show as always. We've got all the weekend's Premier League fixtures, the Manchester Derby, Liverpool Derby. We'll look ahead to a couple of the midweek games in the Premier League next week with the weekend's racing from Sandown and Punchestown and the UK Snooker Championship as well. So first off, what are the big games you're looking forward to this weekend? Got to be the Manchester Derby,
yeah,
is it?
It's the one for me this weekend anyway. The betting currently, I mean, interesting. I mean, Man City, very short price favourites. 11 to 10 about City, 23 to 10 about United. It is at Old Trafford as well, just to say. 12 to 5, the draw. And just to say as well, if you're playing in shop at the weekend, this is one of our many double odds matches which have come good on several occasions over the last number of weeks where we've bet out double the odds on the winning first goal score bets if your player scores in inside the first 15 minutes.
The West Ham-Chelsea game this weekend. Tasty enough, I think Moisey needs to get things going there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they nearly pulled off a really, I suppose you could say, a shock. Last weekend, I thought for long periods that at least get a point at Eastlands, but it wasn't to be in Man City with the late, late show once again.
Yeah. Aaron, any game you're looking forward to this weekend?
Yeah, well, obviously the Manchester derby, the Merseyside derby. It's particularly intriguing as well with Sam Allardyce coming in, and he'll no doubt maybe present a maybe brutal style of football in that one. I'm also interested to see how Tottenham are going to get on. Tottenham are bang out of form at the moment, really need a win in the Premier League, and they're actually, you know, some way off, you know, the kind of City and United at the top. So yeah, interested to see how Tottenham are going to get on.
Yeah, there's, you know, obviously the main games here are sort of Sunday and the two derbies. There isn't a huge amount to get too excited about in Saturday's fixtures, but just trying to search for a little bit of value. And, you know, West Brom, bit of a bounce factor with Alan Pardew going in there. Now, they're unbeaten in three games. Granted, two of those were under the caretaker, Gary Megson, but they're away to Swansea on Saturday. Swansea have the worst home record in the Premier Division. They're really, really struggling with Clement under pressure. You know, West Brom's sort of away form themselves. I think they've only won once away from home, so there's nothing to be getting too excited about. But the fact that they're a little bit of maybe momentum sort of gathering behind them, new manager in, I think I just thought 2-1 to win away to Swansea was a bit of value.
I think the big game this weekend to focus on, I mean, there are two derbies, but United at home to City, because this could pretty much end the title. I've been kind of blown away by Jesse Lingard's form this season. I'm not sure about the rest of you. Where's he considered in the pecking order, even with England, Aaron?
Well, I think with Jesse Lingard, he struggled back end of last year. I think last year he had a particular struggle. And he seems like he's been working hard in the gym. He's been working hard off the field. And, you know, he's coming, he's taking his chance the last few weeks. Obviously, he got the goal against Watford and then the two against Arsenal. He was superb against Arsenal. He really, really was.
That link-up with Martial was incredible for that first goal.
Yeah, I mean, I say a lot of United fans have been saying, oh, we want to see Lukaku, Rashford and Martial together. But, you know, they've put Lingard in there, and I tell you, he looked like one of the best number 10s in the world against Arsenal. He really did. He was that good. I mean, looking ahead to England, I still don't know whether he gets in. Probably not ahead of the likes of Dele Alli. But, you know, he's having a go at it. So fair play to him, bit of a resurgence. And kind of just what United need right now, because they needed players to step up if they're going to keep themselves in the title race.
I think Lingard, just in the last couple of weeks as well, he seems to actually be bringing You know, a bit of goodness out of Lukaku, because, you know, Lukaku's been sort of analysed to death of late and in terms of his goal return. And there was obviously a big sort of fuss made in terms about his link-up play. And, you know, was he a sort of a Manchester United type striker that can also score goals but can also link up the play? And I think there's been a bit of evidence in the last couple of weeks on the back of Lingard's form that he potentially, you know, that little tandem there in terms of linking sort of Lukaku with the midfield, you know, that seems to be coming good, and it could really stand to Lukaku over the next few weeks.
Man City were beaten for the first time in 227 days by Shakhtar, but a little bit of an element of rest in a lot of players. But at the same time, you still had Bernardo Silva, I think Yaya Toure, Gabriel Jesus. It's not as if it's a weakened team. I mean, it's the sort of team that would have won the title many years going. Do we expect to see... Now, we've talked about Jesse Lingard and, you know, their attacking play. Do we expect to actually see Man United doing that much attacking, or are they going to park the bus against City?
I think it was rumoured in the last 48 hours that Mourinho was going to possibly set a stall out once again, similarly to what happened at Anfield over a month ago, where it was just going to be defence. I mean, if that's the case at Old Trafford at home, when United fans will be looking, I mean, there's an 8-point gap at the moment between the two, with the possibility of it going to 11 come the end of this weekend. So, I mean, should it go to 11 points, you'd probably consider... I mean, at the moment, a lot of people think the league is over as a title race at the moment, but if it goes to 11 points, if he sets up that way from minute 1 to minute 90, it's not going to end well.
Aaron, how do United possibly win this game?
To be honest, I think parking the bus is probably how they win it, which is why I think Jose will park the bus and he'll go back to maybe his more defensive style of play. Teams have shown in the past few weeks, you know, if you look at West Ham, Southampton, Huddersfield, even Leicester somewhat before that, but, you know, if you do execute a game plan, a defensive game plan really well, you can keep out City. And I think United have maybe got the quality to maybe enforce kind of such a style of play better than, you know, some of those teams as I just mentioned. So I think Mourinho will be kind of buoyed by watching the performances against City last few weeks. And, you know, I think he'll want to do the same. And, you know, there's every chance that they get a bit of joy. I think that's how they go about winning the game. But then again, City have had a few off days recently. It's only a matter of time before they have an on day again. And, you know, it could also go very badly for them.
Kevin De Bruyne, Paul. He's the kind of guy who sees a pass that everyone else doesn't. Do you think ultimately... either he or one of the likes of David Silva will eventually find a hole and put through an assist, or, you know, just get that goal that's going to open up the game?
Certainly can, yeah. I think I was reading a piece during the week, particularly about David Silva, where he was described as the antidote to panic, which I thought was a really nice line. You know, Kevin De Bruyne, he's having a sensational season. I hope, personally speaking, selfishly, that he continues to do so, because I backed him at 20-1 to be the player of the season.
That looks decent at this stage.
Yeah, I think
it looks very good.
Yeah, I think he's odds, shades of odds on now with maybe Mohamed Salah sort of possibly there to maybe wrestle it off him, or unless one of the strikers, Harry Kane or somebody, starts scoring. But I think in terms of Manchester United, I think Jose, you know, okay, I think, you know, park the bus and what have you. I think there's a huge onus on him to go win this game, because, you know, to reduce that gap to 8 points, it's a season-defining game, I think, for Manchester United, for neutrals. Like, nobody wants Man City, apart from Man City fans, to be 11 points clear sort of heading into the Christmas. I do think maybe that City's brilliant start to the season has kind of maybe put Mourinho's achievements this season at United maybe in the shadow a little bit, and maybe there's an argument to be made that he's underappreciated in some respects. He's building a team, it's not always the prettiest stuff, but if you look at sort of trying to re-establish Manchester United as a force in England, if you take Man City out of it, and I know that's a hypothetical nonsense really, but he has them back sort of ahead of the chasing pack, the Chelsea's, the Arsenal's, the Liverpool's, and I do think that despite Manchester City's tremendous start to the season and unbeaten run in the league, they are still only 8 points clear. And the fact that United can go into this game and with a chance to reduce it to 5 points, I think that's testament to Mourinho and the United players.
You just briefly mentioned there Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, in terms of the first, I just have the first goal scorer markets here in front of me. He's currently 9-1 for the first goal, where, I mean, in your Ladbrokes shop, if you're playing, of course, we're double odds. So, I mean, if he nets inside the first 15 minutes, we'll double that to 18-1 about De Bruyne for the opening goal. But just briefly to touch on a few specials that we have in terms of the cards markets. I mean, it is a derby after all, so should we see plenty of challenges flying in throughout the 90 minutes. 2-1 for any player to get to pick up a red card, 5-2 for a penalty to be awarded. And if you fancy the two, a penalty and a sending off, it's 7-1 in 90 minutes.
Aaron, you kind of see these managers in close quarters. And I'm just imagining a situation whereby if Man City go and win at Old Trafford and Pep repeats his Nathan Redmond treatment and gives an LG up talk to someone like Marcus Rashford, that the place would just go nuts over the cheek of him. Which of these two managers do you find a little more annoying? Pep Guardiola and his philosophy that we keep hearing about, or Jose Mourinho, who's likely to have a sulk at a moment's notice?
Yeah, I think Pep's a little misunderstood. I think that's kind of became kind of relevant when the Redmond incident happened. He's actually a good talker. He talks common sense, and I don't mind Pep. For me, Mourinho winds me up more, and that's only because I think when he was first in England with Chelsea, this is going back to like 2005 sort of era, he was fun, he was bubbly, he was quirky, and you know, I just don't see that from him anymore. So it kind of annoys me that I know we've got this great personality in him, and he just kind of moans and moans and moans and. Yeah, he does kind of wind me up sometimes with that. Because I know he could be, you know, he could be a journalist's dream. He really, really could. And unfortunately, he just likes to moan and almost blow his own trumpet sometimes when maybe they don't deserve it. Pep, I don't mind. Pep, I don't mind. Mourinho.
Just gets my goat then.
Does wind me up.
So just to look at our predictions here. I could quite easily see if City got an early goal that it could be maybe not quite a repeat of when City won 6-1 at Old Trafford.
Six in the City. What's that? Six in the City.
Yeah. That was back in 2011 while Balotelli was king of the hill. But I either see a nil all or City winning by a couple of goals. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to flag up the draw here actually. 12-5 currently about the draw. I mean, if Mourinho sets a stall out to essentially park the bus there, as Aaron was mentioning a few moments ago, I can't see United winning this game, if I'm being honest. Even the fact that it is at Old Trafford, the pressure is on the home side this weekend. The gap is at currently 8 points, with the probability of it going to 11 come the end of the match this coming Sunday at Old Trafford. So I think a draw is a safe play here. 12-5, just a shade over 2-1.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'll also go for a draw. I fancy a score draw. I just think United, you know, for, you know, as good as Manchester City have been, I just think United are just, they've become a really hard team to beat. City, you know, they can play scintillating stuff, but we've seen in the last few weeks that they're kind of doing a Manchester United of old by, you know, winning games late. And that, you know, can be looked at in two ways. It's you know, does that constitute a blip, or is it a sign of champions? Because I read something Phil Neville was talking about the other day about how, when he was playing with Manchester United, when Manchester United were sort of notoriously scoring their Fergie time goals, that the players would consciously make an effort to celebrate these goals in, you know, over the top fashion on the pitch. And it was a message. Phil Neville was saying it was a message to other teams, the team they're playing, the teams that are watching in on the television, whatever, to players and management, whatever. And that kind of, it built a sort of a real strengthen unity about the team. And you can see that from the Manchester City sort of the last three or four games where they've scored late, you know, not the Champions League game, but the other Premier League games. You can see that when they've scored late, you can see what it means to them. And I don't think some of those sort of over-the-top celebrations are necessarily for effect either, you know.
Yeah, Aaron, Sterling with another late winner maybe?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'll be honest, as I mentioned earlier, I'm expecting City to come out and put on a show, put on a performance, simply because they haven't done it. I think Pep Guardiola said after the Shakhtar game, it was maybe a good thing that City lost. You know, they kind of needed to win to regain the focus, and maybe that loss and that little regain of focus has come at the right time for City. So I'm expecting City to go to Old Trafford and put on a show. So I'm going to go 2, maybe even 3-0 City.
I was going to say 2-0 currently. 10-1. Paul touched on the score draw markets. 1-1, 11-2. 2-2 is a 12-1. 3-0 City, 20-1.
So we'll wander up the motorway, lads, for the Liverpool derby. Liverpool at home to Everton Sunday at 2:15. Yep. How do we see this going?
Liverpool 2-7, very, very sharp price, I suppose, after back of their 7-0 triumph at Anfield last night against Spartak Moscow. 9-2, the draw, 9-1 about Everton, and another double odds match here once again. So if you're looking at the first goal score markets, double odds inside the first 15 minutes.
Poole are in incredible form at the moment. 7-0 against Spartak Moscow. They've won 5 of their last 6 in the league. Coutinho, Salah, Mane, Firmino. make you even forget that Daniel Sturridge exists, really. Yeah. Paul, are they anywhere near as good as Neymar, Cavani and Mbappe?
It's an argument to be had. I don't...
Well, what is it then?
Yeah.
Get off that fence.
At the moment, I'd probably say no. They are a fantastic foursome, the Fab Four, whatever they're called. Neymar, Cavani, Mbappe, they're flying with PSG, and it there's no real sort of coincidence at the moment that PSG, I think, are the Champions League favourites at the moment, are they?
Yeah, around about 7-2 the last time I checked.
Aaron, how good is this Liverpool attack?
Well, I think they are one of the best in Europe. I mean, you literally just have to look at the amount of goals they're scoring, and you know, it's not an argument. Yeah, whether they're quite on Neymar, Cavani, and Mbappe's level, you know, probably not yet. But they're so diverse. I think that's the great thing about them. Like, there's so much about them, and the fact that they've got more players in the background. Obviously, Solanke can come in and have a new dimension. Sturridge doesn't look like he's going to get much of a show in, but then they've got Origi out on loan as well, who they can bring back. Like, they've got some seriously impressive players in that front line. They're scoring a lot of goals. And it's good because Jurgen Klopp at the start of the season was saying, we're not scoring enough goals, the front line are not doing enough, regardless of the quality they've got. And yet they've taken it on board and they've reacted. And yeah, Liverpool was super. Like last night against Spartak, they were absolutely scintillating. Like, they were just on a different level against quite a decent team as well. You've got to remember, Spartak are not any old mugs. And they put in a seriously impressive performance. And at the moment, they're definitely one of the best front lines in Europe.
We'll come back to Everton in a second. But eventually, I think we all expect that this Liverpool defence is going to let us down in some game. Is it a case of getting the likes of Virgil van Dijk in? Or ultimately, is he going to be left exposed and isolated at some point? And it'll be like Ashley Williams when he left Swansea. He used to be in a tight defence. But then all of a sudden, when there's a bit more space in behind him, he's going to get caught out. So will Virgil van Dijk end up not looking the 50 million defender and not solve those problems that are there because it's more of a collective issue in how they set up?
Yeah, no, the Virgil van Dijk, I'm not entirely convinced by him, if I'm being completely honest. I don't know whether they would be overspending if they were to bring him in. I'm not sure. At the end of the day, they're not conceding that many goals at the moment anyway. You do feel that, yeah, maybe the defence will let them down. They maybe need another body. They maybe do need another body to just help kind of put a bit of pressure on, you know, the current centre-halves. A little bit more quality. Again, whether Van Dijk is the one, I'm not entirely sure. And again, it's just that thing of overspending. But then again, who isn't overspending on a player these days?
I agree with Aaron. I think the defensive problems were certainly, you know, they were well highlighted and analysed earlier in the season. But when you see the likes of even Moreno, sort of, he's been sort of lambasted from pillar to post by some Liverpool fans, but even it hasn't been horrendous for him, you know. I think at the moment, you know, the sort of the eye-catching football further up the field is maybe sort of papering over the cracks a little bit, but I don't think those cracks are as bad or as gaping as perhaps they were earlier in the season.
Moreno annoyed me now playing the old soldier when he came off against Spartak and putting this upset look in his face. You're coming off injured during the middle of a run-of-the-mill sort of... I know it's Champions League, but, you know, the game is over. You know, spare me these crocodile tears.
Absolutely.
But Milner came in and set up three goals. Do you give Everton much chance, Shane?
It's hard to, isn't it, really? I mean, I'd love to know what. I think now for tonight's game in the Europa League, I know it is a dead rubber, Everton's match. So I think by all accounts, Sam Allardyce is going to be arresting some high profile players.
He's arresting himself, sure, he's not even driving.
Yeah, there you go. So it's going to be interesting to see the starting 11 for Everton this evening. But just briefly to go back to Paul's point about the Champions League outright, they are 7-2 clear favourites, PSG at the moment. Man City 9-2, 11-2 Real. 18-1 about Liverpool. I know Damien Duff was quite sweet in the RT last night after their 7-0 trouncing of Spartak, but you'd have to question that defence further down the line, I suppose.
Yeah, Paul, Everton are actually looking good all of a sudden. They're up to 10th place. Unsworth won his final game in charge. Rooney with a hat-trick. It's just how they set up, really. I like Calvert-Lewin up front because he's got that bit of pace, which means that, you know, if the likes of Rooney can probably, you know, a bit more of a free roll in behind, and because of the pace up front, he gets a bit more room. Who would you like to see play number 10 for Everton? Like Gylfi Sigurdsson, Rooney, Davy Klaassen maybe, or even Ross Barkley whenever when he resurfaces?
Well, I suppose they spent an awful lot of money on Gylfi Sigurdsson, didn't they? And then they go and sign Wayne Rooney as well. And where do they both play in the same team? And that's been the problem. That's Sam Allardyce's problem to
fix.
Who
would hurt Liverpool this weekend?
I just think in a derby game like this, I'd be playing Rooney, you know. I think just after
the dog of war,
the fire, fire in his belly.
Yeah, I just think yeah. I just think in a derby game like this, I think you just need you need your people who've been there and been through it. He is an Everton man, and you know it can go one of two ways again. You know, like he's the type of player who could score them a winner. He's the type of player who could probably get so wound up he gets sent off.
He's 9-1 for the first goal, by the way.
Yeah, Rooney. if Rooney's fit, I just think you know. Back in form a little bit. I just think the ingredients are there. I think this could be a much better derby game than the Manchester one.
Aaron, Everton have 10 points from 15. How do you see them? What do they have to do to beat this Liverpool team that's obviously on fire up front?
To be honest, you've got to say they've got to firm up a little bit defensively. I know they've kept clean sheets in the past two Premier League games, but they were leaking goals before that. Ashley Williams hasn't been convincing. Michael Keane hasn't really justified his price tag. And obviously, we've already touched on how good Liverpool's front line is, and they're going to have to be on top of the game. So maybe a little bit pot-bussy, kind of that sort of style again. Mm-hmm. And I think Allardyce would do that. I think Allardyce will set them up to do that. He'll get bodies behind the ball. He'll get the midfield in there to, you know, kind of just get... As I say, get bodies behind the ball. Whether they can stop them, and I really don't know, but they'll give him a fierce contest, and I expect there to be, you know, one or two kind of tough tackles in this one. I think they'll try and unsettle Liverpool early on, and there might be a red card in this one.
Yeah, I think all we want really from a derby this weekend is a bit of fire. Just to look at the predictions, I'd nearly go Liverpool 3-1 myself. I think they might concede. I mean, they tend to, but I see them just having a bit too much firepower, Paul.
I've just looking through the markets there, and I just had one of the Ladbrokes prices caught my eye, 15-2. You know, if Everton can start the game well, 15-2 Liverpool to win the game but come from behind to do so.
Shane,
I was going to say at 9-1 about your prediction there, Shane, about a 3-1 home. When I'm going to go with, I'm going to go for the outsider, 9-2. Well, not the outsider of the three, but a big price, 9-2 for the draw.
And Aaron?
I think Liverpool will get there eventually. I'm going to go 2-0, but they're going to save the goals until late on. I think Everton are going to keep them out for a long while.
6-1, 2-0.
Okay, so there's plenty of games on over the weekend, but just looking ahead to midweek next week, a game that kind of stands out to me is Spurs against Brighton. Now, I mean, I don't think it's going to capture absolutely everyone's imagination, but just from an Irish point of view, Chris Hughton is coming home to Spurs, where he was assistant manager for, I think, something like 800 years. And Spurs, their form has absolutely fallen apart since Pochettino released the book. I mean, are players that mentally weak, or is it just kind of coincidental, Paul?
In what sense, sorry?
In the fact that, you know, he's released this book and all of a sudden their form has absolutely gone into a tailspin. Is it a case that it's kind of poisoned whatever he's got there, or it's just a coincidence? Because I think players would be unbelievably mentally weak if something like a book coming
That's
out and people talking about it would make your form go to...
I'm not really... Well, I know what you're saying. I'm not necessarily having it, though. I think there might be more of... I think there might be more of a case to be made for, you know, Tottenham doing particularly well in the Champions League and sort of putting their stock into that for a while and maybe just taking their eye off the ball a little bit in terms of the Premier League games. The book stuff, I'm not entirely sure.
What's your read on that, Aaron?
It could be one thing psychologically, but I think for me the reason why they're struggling is just because they're missing key personnel. Toby Alderweireld's been like a huge loss for them. He's a tremendous defender. I think the fact that they've slumped since he's been out of the team shows how good of a defender Toby Alderweireld is. And remember, they're playing like the whole season without the likes of Victor Wanyama, who I think kind of went under the radar as to how good he was last season. So I think for me, the reason why Spurs are maybe not at the heights that they were last season is that they are missing key men.
I think they have a good chance actually of jumping up the table, because they have Stoke at home on Saturday and then Brighton at home as well. You'd expect them to.
Just to briefly mention the betting on that match between Spurs and Brighton, they're 4-1 on Spurs for the win. So plenty short, 9-2 about the draw, and Brighton a big 12-1 for the win. That's next midweek between Spurs and Brighton. But of course, these markets will depend heavily on what happens in this weekend's game, you would imagine.
Paul, what other games are standing out to you?
The midweek games, maybe the West Ham Arsenal game. I do appreciate that West Ham have a game against Chelsea to contend with first on Saturday, but
and Arsenal visits Southampton as well, sure, on Sunday. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It all depends on how West Ham go, you know, against Chelsea in that derby game. But you know, David Moyes coming in when he has done, the fixtures haven't been kind to him. He's had just, you know, a succession of really, really tough games coming up.
That would have been some result had they held on.
Well, this is it, you know, and does that offer a turning point for West Ham? Does it offer a turning point for David Moyes? You would like to think that maybe they'll go into the Chelsea game on Saturday with a bit of confidence. What they can get out of that game, Chelsea are on a reasonable run. You know, this is very much David Moyes, in my eyes, his last chance to sort of prove himself in as a top flight manager in the Premier League. You know, he's been fortunate enough, to be honest, to get this job. And while it's not going to be over for him in the matter of, you know, a run of particularly tough league games, if they're going into Christmas and the New Year fixtures and they're still scraping around and he still hasn't got them sort of up and running, it's going to be a particularly tough second half of the season. And as we saw with Sunderland last year, with Sunderland with Moyes, you know, it doesn't necessarily sort of, he's not necessarily the man maybe that you want to be sort of fighting that fight for.
Aaron, what chance of a fairy tale few days for Moyesy against Chelsea on Saturday and in Arsenal?
I mean, pretty much nil as you go into the chances.
Oh, come on.
No. At the end of the day, they put in a great showing against Manchester City. Yeah, they were probably a little unlucky. City weren't at their best. But this could be a turning point. A good performance against Chelsea followed by a decent performance against Arsenal. You know, it could be a turning point. It's just, it's so hard to see it happening when you've seen how, you know, West Ham have gone all season. It very much feels like it's a run of fixtures where Moyes just has to get through them and then look to build. I think they've got Stoke next weekend, I think, possibly.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, weekend after. So maybe from there is when he needs to start building.
Aaron, thank you very much. I think that's where we'll say goodbye to you. And I think that's where we'll move on from the football, guys. Thanks very much, Aaron.
My pleasure. Cheers.
Moving on to the horse racing, Shane, Duvan is out of the Tingle Creek, so Fox Norton now odds on at 8-13.
Yeah, he's actually now 4-6. I think, Shane, at the last time I checked, that was about an hour ago now. The markets have been just flip-flopping the last 48 hours. Well, pretty much since Tuesday. I mean, there's been word about him going to Sandown this weekend. Then it was rumoured that he was going to the Hillyway in Cork on Sunday, which he ran in last year and won last year. I think, yeah, he's around 4-6, 8-13 at the moment. There's only the 7 left in with the likes of, yeah, Fox Norton, as I mentioned, very sharp price favourite. 11-4, Politolog. Then you've got 12-1, Charbel. 16-1, Armad, and 25-1, and bigger the rest in the field this coming weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a real shame in a way that, yeah, you know, that Duvan's not running, because
there's a lot of anger as well. Actually.
Yeah, well, I suppose punters will be sort of a little bit up in arms. You know, there was actually no, you know, Willie Mullins never firmly committed. The horse was entered in the race. Everyone wanted to see the horse run in this race. And as Shane says, it was kind of a flip-flop from last year where Undesow ran in the Tingle, yeah, Creek, and Duvan ran in the Hillyway in Cork.
Undesow's out for this race now as,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, we'll probably go for the race in Cork on Sunday. You looked at last week and it was kind of the Gordon Elliott weekend, you know, winning the three grade ones at Ferry House. And Willie Mullins, while he has all these big heavy hitters, you just get this sense that they haven't, it's not that they haven't sort of caught fire yet, it's just you get this sense that they haven't sort of really come out of the traps yet. And this weekend, I thought, was going to be Willie Mullins' big sort of statement of intent for the season, with Duvan in the Tingle Creek and Undesow in the Hillyway and Jack Adam in the Durkin, the John Durkin at Punchestown. We're robbed of one with Duvan. It's a shame because the Tingle Creek's a cracking race. It's one of the real sort of highlights.
It is. And just to briefly, very briefly touch on the Andy Post feel, I mean, this week it's been hilarious really, because I've been talking to traders all week and we laid fairly substantial bets on Duvan right up until the 48 declaration stage, just this morning in fact. So now that he's not in the race, there's going to be a lot of burnt dockets this weekend, sadly, if you've backed Duvan. But if you're on Fox Norton at odds against, which he was at the start of the week, around 6-4, 11-8, you'll be happy enough.
Yeah, improving sort, Fox Norton, I think maybe...
Very good winner last day as well.
Absolutely. And Politolog, Paul Nichols' horse is sort of a semi-interesting race, or sorry, runner fourth in the JLT behind York Hill at Cheltenham. And the second horse in that race at Cheltenham, Top Notch, came out and won really well since. So Politolog maybe sort of...
It looks like clear pick in terms of betting anyway. I mean, it's currently 12-1 bar the front two. So in terms of betting without... Yeah. Could be the one for
it's me. Not the match that everyone wanted with Altior injured, with Duvan now. I can see the sense maybe if they're not happy with Duvan, you know, did a bit of work on the Curra on Tuesday and then did a bit of a canter yesterday, I think, by all accounts, and a bit of work this morning, they weren't happy.
Mullins had said maybe he hadn't fully recovered from what he did on Tuesday and had decided not to declare him for Sandown. So, Fox Norton, I suppose, were.
Yeah.
You've got to be fancying.
You'd have to, and Politolog, hopefully, for the forecast.
Yeah. So then the John Durkin at Punchestown on Sunday, basically a battle between the Cheltenham winner, Size and John, and Jack Adam.
Yeah, I mean, Size and John, of course, who was down to run earlier on a few weeks back in the Betfair Chase at Haydock and wasn't to be. I mean, the ground was absolutely bottomless on that occasion as well. So you can't blame Jessica Harrington for taking the Gold Cup winner, the three-time Gold Cup winner, I should say, from last season. Now, betting very tight between the front three, only half a point separating them here. Jack Adam, 2-1 favourite, 9-4 Disco, 5-2 then Sizing John, and it's 11-1 bar, 11-1 Alpha de Zobo, 16s Zabana, sub-lieutenant 16s. So a very condensed market towards the head of the betting once again here in this race on Sunday.
Yeah, Jack Adam going for three John Durkins in a row. I'm a Disco fan if it runs. Primarily, like, finished the season really, really well last year on a real upward curve and has the benefit of a run at Down Royal earlier on, maybe a couple of weeks back. Jack Adam and Size and John both coming out fresh for this.
It's hard to know, really. We've seen with our Duke at Down Royal as well. He was massively disappointed first time out for Jessica Harrington in the Jan Wine Chase. Now, I know there was excuses made. I think he's had a back operation since. The Irish national winner, but she hasn't really, I suppose, similar enough to Mullins, her big stable stars. Well, they've been letting coming out this year so far in her yard, just haven't really been firing on all cylinders thus far. So I think Size and John might be one to take on this weekend. And don't forget, if you're playing in any of our ROI shops this weekend, our 5-1 offer applies once again on two meetings on the Saturday card, Sandown and Wolverhampton, and a Punchestown at Sunday. So basically back a winner 5-1 or bigger, and not only will you be collecting your winnings, but you'll be getting a free bet matching your stake as well.
And where do you see the value in the Henry VIII at Sandown on Saturday?
It's a tricky one. Yeah, again, I've actually backed Brain Power Andy Pulse for the Arkle. Now, just working off the tissue prices at the moment, I'd imagine he'll be around even money or even a shade of odds on come race time as well. Finian's Oscar will be around 4-1 as well. There's only another small field here, just the six of them, but it's strength and depth again, isn't it, in the Henry VIII Chase. Sorayal is in her Capitaine, who was impressive over hurdles last season. I mean, dare I say it, he's a high horse possibly, but if he wins impressively this weekend, he'll be shorter once again for the Arkle next March, Brain Power, I think.
The Beecher Chase at Aintree on Saturday, it's always an interesting race over the Grand National Fence. It's just the one circuit, but there'd be a few, like Black Lion is the favourite for that race, fourth in the Grand National last year, but there's an old horse in there called Portrait King, who has had plenty of spins over these fences, both in the Grand National and in the Beecher Chase before, and in the Topham. He's a 12-year-old. He's old now, but he's a good gamey old horse. He's had real mixed fortune over these fences, but back at the Grand National meeting in April, he was staying on really well to finish third in the Topham, which is, I think, the day before the Grand National. And I just think at a big price, if things went his way, he could be one staying on for a place.
Yeah, I mean, Black Lion is very, very short, isn't he? 5-2 for a horse that won a god-awful RSA, dare I say it, there a couple of seasons back. He hasn't even won a race since, and he's 5-2. Now, I know he travelled really well in the Grand National last season, but for a horse that hasn't won a race since his novice days, he's one to be taken on, I reckon, at those prices.
So just moving from the horse racing, where Duvan is out, and that takes a bit of the fizz out of that race, just onto the snooker, where a huge amount of the heavy hitters are gone. I think at the time we're recording here, 14 of the 16 top seeds have been knocked out of the 2017 UK Snooker Championship. It's got to be Ronnie Sullivan all the way.
Yeah, currently 4-6, very, very short. We're just in the concluding stages of the last 16 rounds in the UK Championship. So 4-6 a bit, Ronnie. Sean Murphy, 11-2, 10-1, Ryan Day, 10-1, Stephen Maguire, Joe Perry, 12-1. It's 20s bar. it's an interesting one. Mark King was let down on the pink, I think it was, for his first 147 in live tournament play earlier on in the tournament. I think he missed out in 20 grand on top prize as well. I think he forgot the pink was off the spot. He left this, he went too far down the table, took it to the middle, and it was nearly a fantastic recovery. But he just won his last, or his first, I should say, first and only ranking tournament just last season. And he has been playing pretty well this season. He's 20-1. And we're still paying third the odds, the first two, and the outright betting as well, even though we're coming to the last eight of the UK Championship. So 20-1, he's on the opposite side of the draw of Ronnie as well, which is crucial in this. So Mark King at 20s for a bit of value in the concluding stages of the UK Championship.
What a sickener to let yourself down in the pink. I'd be playing pool away the finest up in Rat Mines most weeks with a friend of mine, and I had him down for a 7-ball clearance. I was down on the black. Made a mess of it. You ended up winning the frame, so I know the feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was 20 grand or in and around 20 grand for top prize as well. It would have been his first in tournament play, but his high break up until now, sadly, still stands at 146 in tournament play. So gut wrencher for Mark King.
Yeah.
But hopefully he can make it up and win the tournament now.
Yeah, and Rocket Ronnie looking to match Steve Davis's record haul of 6 titles. I think we'd all like to see Steve Davis taken down off his perch, would we?
Yeah, I mean, Ronnie's been—he's a celebrity of these sorts in this sport. He's single-handedly, nearly many would say, kept the sport going for many years. I mean, we've seen Barry Hearn come in and take over the responsibility of putting snooker back on the map, really, because it has been on a downward spiral for many years. But I even think he started talking about going into the jungle next year, Ronnie O'Sullivan. So it'll be interesting to see when we price that up for next year's renewal of I'm a Celebrity, how he gets on there. But I think that was more in his mind this week than actually winning the tournament potentially. So there you go.
You need your characters and snooker.
Yeah, you do.
You think back to when you were younger and you were watching it, and it was Higgins and Jimmy White and Dennis Taylor and a few of the other lads. You know, there were some great characters.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love to spend a few hours up in the high stool with Ronnie?
Oh yeah,
there'll be some serious stories I'd say to be had.
They're crack. You'd feel unbelievably boring beside him. You'd imagine the stories he has, and you just going, keep going, Ronnie. So that's the snooker. And just moving on finally to the GAA this weekend, big Leinster final coming. Moorfield of Kildare against St Lomond's of Westmead at O'Moore Park on Sunday at 2 o'clock. The really interesting point here is Luke Dempsey. He's the central protagonist here, the manager of Lomond's, because he's just led them to 3 in a row in Westmead. And interestingly, that came directly off the back of winning back-to-back Kildare titles with the opposition for Sunday, Moorfield.
Yeah, I mean, the GAA traders have found it hard to split the two. It's evens each of two here. St Lomond's evens, Moorfield evens, the draw 7-1, and only 1 point separating them on the handicap as well. -1 St Lomond's, 11-8. 11-8 on, +1 about Moorfield. I think it's fair to say two teams that not many people had predicted to get to the Leinster final this year.
No, sure, as soon as St Vincent's got knocked out by Rathnew, everyone's ears pricked up. I couldn't possibly see the winner of this going on to win the All-Ireland club title.
Yeah, but, evens each of two, it's going to be very hard to separate the two. What are your thoughts on it
yourself?
Yeah,
well, Moorfield won it in 2006, and they have a lot of the people that were involved in that are either part of the management team now, or the likes of Daryl Flynn and Ronan Sweeney are still in the team, and David White as well. I think he was 18 when they won it back in 06. I find it very tough, because the most outstanding players on the field are probably John Heslin and maybe Paul Sherry for Lomond's, but the experience is there with Moorfield. Very, very hard one to call. When it comes down to really tight games, I always tend to say who has the very best couple of players on the field, and I think Lomond's might, so I'll just about go for Lomond's here, just maybe by a point.
Yeah, briefly to touch on the outrights as well, they're 14 St Lomond's to win the All-Ireland club in next St Patrick's Day, of course. Moorfield 14-1, Carrifin still sharp price favourites at the moment, 6-4.
Okay, so do we have any bets for the week?
Yeah, I'm going to throw up Mark King at 20-1 each way. Hopefully, should he get to the final? I mean, you're getting a third of the odds should he get to the final of the UK Championship. And I'm also going to put up a double this weekend, Cross Sports double, 12-5, about a draw in the Manchester Derby. And Brian Power, who'll be going off round about a shade of odds on, you would imagine, in the Henry VIII and obviously Chase this weekend. So a double for me, drawing the Derby, the Manchester Derby, and Brian Power and Mark King at a big price in the snooker.
I might throw in just the one I mentioned earlier on there, Portrait King in the Beecher at Aintree on Saturday. Would really need things to go its way. Old over the hill almost at 12, but likes that place when things go well and could run into the money at a big price, 20s or so.
Lads, I think we've it all said. So from Paul Hare from the Irish Mirror, Shane Mahan from Ladbrokes, myself, Shane Stapleton. We had Aaron Flanagan over the phone. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify. Until next week, we'll chat to you then.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.